Welcome to Bitches on Comics. I'm Sarah Century. I am looking at a Hellraiser doll right now.
I'm Essie Fleenor, and I'm looking deep into Carol's eyes. Carol Danvers. Today we have a question from Johnny, longtime listener, first-time emailer. Hi, Johnny. First off, I absolutely love the podcast. Oh, gosh, now you stop it. Keep up the great work. Oh, we will. I was listening to the latest episode about Poison Ivy, and it reminded me of something I've been wondering for a while. Have Ivy and Swamp Thing ever interacted?
Have they?
Have they?
They sure have.
They sure have. The end. That's the episode. Bye.
No further explanation needed. But yeah, I don't know. I have seen them interact. I think that they have an interesting interaction with each other. They both knew each other before. So Pamela knew Alec. Alec knew Pamela before they were associated with the Green.
Were they both students of Woodrow's?
Yeah, they were both in, like, I mean, you know, this changes the continuity, but, like, you know, they both knew Woodrow, like, somehow.
Yeah, that guy's an asshole.
He's a huge asshole, and he was equally an asshole to both of them, I would say. He does really terrible things to both of them in slightly different ways. Obviously, he kind of manipulated Ivy in a lot of very creeper, terrible professor dude kind of ways, which is slightly different than the impact that he had on Alec. But,
yes.
You know, he comes back and kills a bunch of people right in front of him just to prove a point later. So who's to say what's worse? But
God, I fucking hate the Floronic Man. I hate him.
He's truly a monster. Anytime somebody makes an attempt to lighten him in people's eyes, I find it to be highly upsetting because, if nothing else, he's essentially somebody who led to a lot of huge problems in her life. So I think that one of the most important things is that whenever Swamp Thing first comes to be the Swamp Thing, you see him have kind of an immediate need to do good. He does good things almost automatically, kind of just because of whatever reason. He's still being guided by Alec, right? So he still thinks of himself as a man who becomes a monster, which of course we find out is not the case, but he has these kind of ethics that he's holding on to for dear life. Whereas whenever Poison Ivy is bonded with the Green, it is through a traumatic process of experimentation. And she is reeling from that in the first appearances that we see. She has a lot of kind of eco-fascist ideology. So she wants the humans to suffer and things like that, you know, things that are fairly relatable, but not necessarily good. So she eventually comes around. We have a long process of her healing and kind of being destroyed again and healing. We see that a lot with her. So I think that just the sheer difference in how they approach the Green and that situation, their new powers and things like that, is some of the most important things to observe whenever we're looking at any kind of a friendship between them, which they do have a friendship, but they are extremely, extremely different in how they came to their powers.
For sure. And I think that the way they're portrayed is so different, right? Like, in the beginning, Swamp Thing is treated as a villain, and then there's we talked about it in our very first episode, the whole Alan Moore comic run where he retcons his history and sort of makes Swamp Thing not a man trapped in vegetation, but actually vegetation come to life that is, in fact, not a man. We've talked about the gender identity of Swamp Thing. I've used they, them pronouns for Swamp Thing. I'm also, like, very aware that lots of people who are gender fluid or gender non-binary, gender non-conforming, use binary pronouns, not here to judge. So I've been sliding back into using he for Swamp Thing.
Because he often calls himself he.
It's exactly.
Kind of, yeah, we've been kind of on the fence with that. And I think that that was even what we first said was, it feels weird to call him he, because I know that he's just always been written by these people who aren't necessarily always looking at how non-binary, you know, Swamp Thing is as a premise. So it kind of borders between, is it erasure or is it, you know, Swamp Thing accepting his own identity? What is it? It's kind of not the easiest one to parse, but at any rate, definitely non-binary.
My new outlook is that Swamp Thing uses he / they, you know? And really, the truth is Swamp Thing mostly communicates without words. We translate it into words because, hello, we're people who have to speak externally. But a lot of Swamp Thing, his communication, their communication is with the Green through connectivity with plants, through being literally connected to them. But I think it's really important to think about, you know, yes, Swamp Thing was a villain, then he got sort of retconned into being more, I'm connected to the Green, I'm just the voice for nature. That's been, you know, treated with some nuance at different points. But today, no one really looks at Swamp Thing and thinks, oh, what a villain. But they do frequently look at Poison Ivy and call her a villain. And I think the important piece of it is, like, because people tend to gender Swamp Thing as a man, and Ivy is a woman, identifies as a woman.
And is very feminine, too.
Yes, right?
Very feminine presenting in her attitudes. Her connection with the green is extremely feminine. Like, all of her story is based in femininity.
It's eco-feminist, too, right? So it's like the idea that humanity's relationship with the planet is a recapitulation of men's dominance of women. Again, a little bit binary here, but know that we have lots of nuance in how we're thinking about these things.
And also that this is how other people are presenting it. So exactly. We kind of have to find our own way of looking at it, I guess.
Exactly. And so I think that it's that feminist piece and how outspoken and how polemic her politics are. Like, Ivy's comfortable with going to war with humanity. At different points, so has Swamp Thing been. But he's always been sort of like called back, quote unquote, I'm using scare quotes, to reason at different points.
And it's the revenge plot line and things like that, whereas we're very willing to accept that Poison Ivy is just erratically violent, right?
Exactly. So you talked a little bit about the green. I think that's like so important whenever we talk about either of these characters, because they don't interact a ton in comics, unless I'm mistaken, time and again, usually like sometimes in alternate histories or alternate futures or what have you. But they are always connected in theory, because it's not like Swamp Thing connects with the green and then steps out of it. He's always connected to the green. And you understand Ivy's relationship with the green better than I do, Sarah. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Actually, I don't think I do, because they are terrible at establishing what it even is.
LOL, okay, one understands.
I would say is what I understand is that I understand nothing, basically, because they exist in the same world. There's definitely crossover. There's been times whenever Ivy, like, you know, there's people who ship those two. There's been that very casual romance thing that we see every now and again between those two, which I always think is just the most bullshit thing in the world, because, yeah, like, they are not the fucking same, okay? Like, they have almost nothing in common. How they view the world, nope. How they view the green, absolutely not. Like, what they do with their day-to-day lives.
How they're treated by the heroes.
How to treat their human partner. Yeah, these are all things that they could not be more different. Mm-hmm. And I think that whenever somebody tries to put them in a relationship together, also, you know, they knew each other in forms that neither of them identify with or are comfortable with anymore. Like, neither of them really want to go back to their past selves. So that idea, too, that you would come out of something that cataclysmic and be like, oh, now I'm just going to like hook up with somebody that I associate with that time period in my life. That doesn't usually happen. I mean, it does sometimes, but it's not usually great. And why would you want to? You know, these are all things that make me be like, I just don't really like it because it just doesn't make sense. It's one of those ones where you're just like, no, they both have really long standing relationships with human partners that can't hope to understand them. So like, and I like those because they give you a lot of interesting dynamic. You know, I learn more about Swamp Thing through Abby Arcane than I do through Swamp Thing.
Absolutely.
I learn a lot about Poison Ivy through how she interacts with Harley. So I think that those are important dichotomies. So whenever you take that away and you're just like, well, they're both into plants, so I guess they're married now, you know, it's just kind of reductive. I can see why there might be an attraction, I guess, but
yeah, totally. I think that they would have a lot to talk about, but I don't think that they would choose long-term companionship with one another. I'm with you, Sarah. Like, I think that, like, why would you want to be with someone who's so similar to yourself? Like, that's not a great way to grow. You know, it's not
similar, but complete opposite.
Exactly.
They're basically the same in, like, if you work together, but like on the same thing that you both really like. Or
yes,
something.
Exactly.
You're
well said.
Completely not compatible whatsoever. Like, it just doesn't, that storyline doesn't make sense. And I think it is something that is extra grating because it just kind of pushes heteronormative ideas onto these characters that we've, you know, really explicitly stated how important it is to their personalities that they are not that, you know?
Absolutely. And I think that Alec / Swamp Thing has a desire to still be connected to humanity. And I think that Ivy finds herself connected to humanity. I don't think she usually wants to be.
She has to struggle with it to a pretty intense degree.
Yeah. I mean, that was my sense, but I was like, oh, I don't know Ivy as well as some people, so I don't want to overstate. But I think that those things are really important. And like, the differences between them are great. I read somewhere someone was like, Poison Ivy isn't just female Swamp Thing. And that blew my mind. I was like, who thinks of them like that? I've realized people do. People think of her as like the seductress version of Swamp Thing, which is like, no, they're so different.
There's so much of a different nuance to both of those characters that I think that they would see eye to eye on some things, but it would be very difficult for them to have a long-term conversation even with each other. That was Swamp Thing's entire focus is his role in the Green and how he treats the Green and, you know, what his interactions are. A lot of Ivy's focus is telling humanity to step the fuck off, you know?
Yeah. So, like,
I think that that's just such different approaches, and they don't combine. Those are not similar. They both really like green things. That's like what they have in common.
Totally.
And they were both abused by the same terrible human, you know? That's not really a great foundation for any kind of a relationship or even a friendship, honestly. But I can see why, like, they would meet up and talk.
Yeah. And I see them as part of a lineage is how I'm sort of thinking about it. And I think that one of the great examples of that is actually Neil Gaiman's Black Orchid, particularly number two, Black Orchid, the second Black Orchid, goes on a journey to find herself. And she's with her, like, little sister slash daughter. Weird. And then she meets Ivy. It's not a great representation of Ivy. And then she meets Swamp
Thing. Gaiman really struggled with Ivy, just to make a note of that. Like, the Secret Origins Ivy. There's a lot of really cool stuff in that, but they definitely, by the end of it, are just like, yeah, she's hysterical. Like,
yeah, they do fall on some deeply misogynistic tropes around her
of course
mental
they
health
do.
And
they
well-being.
Always do with Ivy, unfortunately. But, I mean, if you're going to look at somebody that actually was trying to extend some sympathy towards the character, Gaiman was one of the first to do that. So
agreed. And I think the art shows that even better than the plot. Like, I think the art around Ivy in Gaiman's works is really powerful. And that is partially Gaiman, right? Like, it's a conversation between writer and artist. And I think it's just a bummer that so much of the plot ends up being, like, really damning of her when it's like, what? You were so close! So
you were so close.
So close. They also, like, in the alternate history of Injustice, Gods Among Us, that was based on a video game. I did not realize that. And is about where Superman's, like, a real jackass. So a lot of the villains end up being, like, the good guys in this storyline. It's in year three. It starts with issue 22. Ivy and Swamp Thing team up to save the burning forest around them. And actually, they start out fighting with each other. Ivy's, like, trying to kill Swamp Thing. And he's like, what the fuck? Don't kill me. And she's like, you're an asshole. And he's like, no, I'm trying to protect the green. And she's like, oh, wait, whoa. I like that idea. I'm on board. Let's do it. Let's just, like, fucking protect the green. It's, like, really cute, actually. Like, they, like, touch foreheads. To me, it did not feel romantic at all. It felt very, like, when you're talking to somebody before you have to go do something hard, like grocery shop, and you're, like, put your foreheads together. You're like, are you ready? Are you ready? I'm ready. Are you ready?
You see dudes do it in movies all of the time, and nobody makes that.
No one's like, ooh, boyfriends.
Super gay or whatever, even though, like, sure, but.
Super gay, yes. These two, no.
Different standards is all I'm saying.
Agreed. Also in Swamp Thing from 2013, when Rotworld happens, and it's like a lot of the overlapping story between Swamp Thing and Animal Man, Swamp Thing comes back out of, I can't even remember where he is, the green, I think, and he comes out to like the real world, and it starts around issue 13, and the world is like pretty much gone. He's standing in the bayou and it's a desert, but Ivy is there and she's been preserving the green in sort of like a Jack and the Beanstalk kind of thing, up a stalk at the top. She's been helping keep the green alive. And they don't interact very long, and they end up disagreeing about what the right way to handle things is. But I think it's like a pretty good Ivy. I like Ivy in that. And she's constantly like, what are you doing? Like, don't do that. Don't do that. Alec, goddammit. Yeah. And it's like pretty cute.
Totally. I mean, that's kind of the thing is that in the end, Ivy is always going to be paired up, I think, with women. Almost always, because she gets really annoyed with how dumb all the dudes are.
And, like, so, fair enough.
Fair enough, because they always are around Ivy. But that's kind of her constant thing is being like, hello, male-presenting character. Could you please not fucking step on the goddamn flower?
Yeah,
and everybody's totally. Just like, wow, what's that person all mad about? She's hysterical.
Yeah, instead of like, actually, she has a goddamn point, you know?
Yeah, she has a great point.
That's a really cool Swamp Thing, too, because he like, puts wings on and creates horns for himself. That's cool. And it's a cool version of Ivy. She has like really beautiful lip color. If anybody knows how to make that lip color happen on human lips, please email me. I would like to do that to my lips because it looks so cool. And then the last one I was going to mention, and we were just talking about this, Sarah, is Justice League Action, which is an animated series for DC Kids. There's a really funny episode where I think it's called The Bad Green Thumb or something like that, where Ivy controls Swamp Thing. And there's a point where he's like, you know, Ivy can manipulate plants. I'm a plant. It's like so funny. And everybody's just like getting funny. Their asses kicked by like this combo. And in it, it's weird because Ivy's like my future husband, but then she's like hanging out. She does with the Harmony. Thing
that, yeah. That sucks. But it was a really funny cartoon. And also, it kind of, I mean, you know, Swamp Thing was out of character too. So,
oh, yeah. It's like a very weird Swamp Thing. It's like not any Swamp Thing I've ever heard before or anything, but I loved it.
Yeah, this is like 80s movie Swamp Thing or something. This is like funny, edgy Swamp Thing that does not exist in the comics world.
He's pretty much the straight man in every scenario. Swamp Thing, he's so sincere all the time. You know, like he doesn't have that edge that obviously Ivy has, that like lots of other characters have. He's just like, no, I must protect the green. So yes, it was very off-character representation, but hysterical. If you want to see them interact in a way that you're just like not going to see in the comics, that is so, so funny. I love that she's like pulling his strings and like kicking the Justice League's ass because she's like, I'm Ivy. Hello.
Yes, that's always the most important thing is that we see a lot of power from Ivy.
Absolutely. I mean, she's always holding back pretty much. Anything else on Poison
Ivy?
We
don't ship it.
We do not ship it. If you take nothing else away from this episode, we do not ship it. And it's me. I ship everything, but I do not ship it.
But I do love both of those characters. And I do love when they interact with each other.
Me too. Like, I kind of feel like they're almost like cousins or like, you know, college friends.
Exactly.
Comrades in arms. They've been through some fucking dark shit.
Similar things in some ways.
It's not quite as extreme, but I was just reading the new Kelly Thompson Captain Marvel, the 2019, and it kind of reminds me of the way Rogue and Carol are able to be like, we're not friends, but like, we're cool. We're never going to be friends, but like, we're cool. Because we've been through like similar trauma. Oddly enough, because one of them was traumatizing the other one. But you know what? It's a complicated scenario. But in this, it's like
back and forth after a while.
Yeah, that's fair. Boundaries are fair. This feels like, oh, we have a common trauma, a common gift, and literally nothing else in common. So of course we would like, like you were saying, it's like they're coworkers. They're going to talk around the water cooler. And in this case, the water cooler is like a beautiful plant that they're going to stand next to and talk. I think that's the best case scenario in seeing them together. I think you're right that people do shoehorn in a romance and it's always like womp womp.
Ugh, I know. And literally Harley is standing right there.
She's always right there.
She's always literally less than 3 feet away from Poison Ivy.
Unless Ivy is like, get away, I need some space.
I need some space. You've been within 3 feet of me for the last 7 years.
And Harley's like, wait, is this an attachment thing? Am I being weird? I can't tell. Hi, listeners. If you didn't know, we have a new fiction project called Decoded. It's a Pride anthology. What we're doing is we're publishing a story a day for every month of Pride. It's kind of a way to bring Pride home. And we have subscriptions on sale, don't we, Sarah?
Yes, we do. They are $12 until May 17th, and that's whenever they go to their regular price of $15. If you ask me, kind of a steal either way, but...
And that's $12 for 30 stories, right, Sarah?
I hope so. That's what we've planned.
And every single person... who publishes with us comics, short stories, flash fiction, longer form short stories. They're all LGBTQ+ writers. So you are actually helping keep writers writing.
Yeah, we're paying everybody, which we like to do.
We give the monies to the peoples. So if you're ready to buy a subscription right now for only $12, make sure to go to decodedpride.com. Meet Betty and Veronica. Written by Amy Chu. Art by Maria Sanapo. Colors by Vinicius Andrade. Letters by Taylor Esposito.
Yay!
So fun.
I love this comic.
I didn't know that I needed this comic in my life.
Yeah.
we talked about how Amethyst is like just a really fun comic. This is so fun. It is just like every panel, every page is just delightful. I love everything about it.
I love everything about it. I love the title, Red Sonja and Vamprilla Meet Betty and Veronica. What else could you need out of life? That is incredible. The fact that this comic even came into being is just majestic. They, I believe, also intended to end the series after the first run because they didn't think it was going to do that well, or they didn't know how well it was going to do. And they've expanded the series. So I think they're on issue 10 now. This series is so, so fun. Amy Chu is an incredible writer. She did a ton of work on Red Sonja already. Her Red Sonja definitely, to me, is one of the ones that just kind of, we talk about how good Gail Simone's Red Sonja was. It's kind of that to Amy Chu for me, like in a lot of ways. And Amy Chu had writing partnerships and worked with a lot of other really good writers. So I'm not going to say that it's just those two holding up the franchise, but it is definitely those two that always write the Red Sonja that in my head click. The best, right? And that's the one that we see here. And I love her so, so, so much. I love this Red Sonja and all of her actions through this entire comic. I think she's like kind of the standout character.
I was going to say the same thing. And when she's a jock at Riverdale High, I don't know if I've ever been more attracted to anyone. Like, she's clearly an adult. She's not a teenager.
Yeah, that's like the thing with Riverdale too, though, right? Where you're just the like, whole show. These are people who are like playing teenagers and they're all like in their late 20s. So yeah. You're just like, I feel weird about this because I'm like, that person is attractive. And then I'm like, oh my God, I'm talking about a high school student. And then I'm like, I'm not.
Yeah.
But I am, because fiction is weird and this is weird. That's how it is with Red Sonja.
Yeah, she's not a teenager.
Definitely not.
It's like she's cosplaying for me.
Yes.
Personally.
That is what it's like.
A football player. And it turns out something that I find unattractive in men, I find very attractive on Red Sonja.
Oh, yeah. Well, oh. I mean, that's not going to be the first time we say that about Red Sonja, so who can do literally anything and still be a complete babe. So, yeah, no, she's clearly an adult. So is Vamprilla. It's really funny to watch them kind of walk around with the teenagers and be like, yep, we're all teenagers here.
And so he's like always ordering a beer, like at a coffee shop, everywhere. At a diner. And everyone's like, do you have ID? And she's like, I'm Red Sonja. Give me the ale.
Like, I have a sword.
And when they take her sword away, she's so pissed.
She's so mad. And she just gets more violent until she gets her sword back again. They're like, it's actually less violent for us just to let her keep the sword.
When she takes her sword to football practice.
Oh my God, it's so fucking funny. Like, what the title is, it's 100% what the title is. It's these characters interacting with each other. I mean, now they're on Draculon, so now they've gone into Vamprilla's world. But for the longest time, it was them interacting in Riverdale High is basically what the first arc is. So it's, you know, school newspaper stuff is happening. Vampires, et cetera, et cetera.
Someone's like, Sonja, you're failing all your classes. And she's like, I literally don't care.
I'm fucking Red Sonja. I don't know what to tell you.
I'm from Hyrcania. They're like, what does that mean?
She doesn't want to wear the clothes. Like, people keep trying to make her wear clothes. And she's just like, Dilton's like, where are my pants? And she's just like, I never bother with pants. It's like, you fucking don't. You're right. I just thought about how definitely Red Sonja is the one who will go into a fight completely naked and not give a shit. She does not care. And she wants adventure. That's like the funniest part. She's all, you promised me adventure to Vamprilla. And Vamprilla's like, why do I have this grumpy date with me all of the fucking time? Like, how did this happen where I have a grumpy girlfriend that I'm constantly trying to appease? Like, I guess I'll do it. But, and that's like Vamprilla 100% just to be like, I guess I'm in this weird position right now. So I'll just do the thing.
Well, it's like you take two pairs of characters who have great chemistry. Love, yes. Betty and Veronica. Love Red Sonja and Vamprilla. They both have a bit of an odd couple thing, but also like really supportive of one another. And God, I love women who've got each other's backs, you know? And you really get that. God, but then you compound them together. Oh, the hijinks, the preciousness, the hilarity. I love it so much. I love it so much.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with this comic. I think it's one of the best that I've read. That just, is so fun. It's like one of those ones where every time I see it in my pull list, I'm like, I'm going to have a great time. Like, I'm going to be able to read something goofy that's great and has a lot of sword fighting and Vamprilla like biting people. And of course, Betty and Veronica doing hijinks as they do best. And it is kind of their story.
Why won't the newspaper print my article about a vampire cult?
I know, that was so, so funny. And then, like, we can't talk about parts of that without giving away the whole thing, yeah, of course. Yeah, totally, totally. But the responses, the interactions. There's a detective whose name is Irene, who I think was really fun in this comic.
She's really funny.
Very anti-cop, but her hilariousness was endearing. And, yeah, just the whole thing, honestly. It's one of those comics where it's just, like, the title, obviously, people kind of... I remember people being like, I'm really not sure about this. And me being like, it'll probably be good, because I saw the creative team. I love all of these characters. I've always loved all of these characters. We've talked so, so much about how much I love Vamprilla. And she's great in this. She's not really the focal point. She gets to kind of step back and let Red Sonja be the funny one. Meanwhile, Betty and Veronica also are pretty prominent. Their characterization isn't really that much, but their interactions with each other and with Vamprilla and Red Sonja are... And they have just so many good one-liners in this comic. There's just so many funny little jokes of like, yeah, it's not like we like threw you in prison or something. Why would you want to leave Riverdale to like Vamprilla after she literally got thrown in prison for like eating all the blood in the blood bank? There's just a bunch of goofy, goofy shit like that. That's super fun to read.
It's so funny to see this juxtaposition. You know what I feel like it does? I feel like adding Red Sonja and Vamprilla just shows how absurd Betty and Veronica's lives are already. You know, like, they're
like, it's like you don't blink an eye, basically.
Yeah, they're like, I'm upset that I didn't get my article in the paper. I'm upset that I'm not doing well in school. And also, I'm going to solve this murder. It's like, what? The stakes in those two things are so different, but not to a high schooler, right?
Like, yeah, to a high schooler, it's all the same.
So funny. And I love that Red Sonja and Vamprilla get like wrapped up in it, you know? The fact that Red Sonja joins the football team is hysterical.
That is hysterical.
She's trying to solve a murder.
And she just ends up in this role because why not? Yeah, that's kind of what the comic is like, is basically Amy Chu obviously just having a great time with how ridiculous this premise is. And, you know, making it just as fun as it needs to be to succeed. Because, like, you know, we didn't come here to read like Watchmen. Like, we didn't exactly come here to read something that's deep and serious. We wanted to read something that's really fun. These four completely ludicrous characters interacting with each other in a way that is actually kind of tender, because they all have each other's backs to such a degree. So yeah, I mean, everything about this is great. Like, I can't recommend it enough, because it was just fun, you know?
Well, the writing is fantastic. The pacing is so good in the writing. The colors are beautiful. The art's fantastic. I think it's always hard when you have a character who's portrayed by actors that are like well known, right, to then try and capture that likeness, but not too much, you know, because, right, you don't want to take them out of the experience. And I thought that the art really balanced it well.
Yeah, I always think of the artists who do that, and you're just like, this is like a creepy like thing to read, because it's like you just staring at these people's pictures and drawing them specifically who they are. When does it just become tracing, kind of?
Yeah, totally.
So this doesn't really fall into that pitfall at all. I think that the Veronica, for instance, is a very unique looking Veronica, mm-hmm, but you can tell her apart from Vamprilla, who has essentially like a lot of the same features. So yeah, I don't know. I think that the art's great. Yeah, it's totally one of those comics where you just run out of ways to say, oh, this is really great.
Yeah, go read it. That's like the final answer to this whole thing is go read it. You will not regret it.
If you look at that title and you go in your head, I might like that, then yes, you will probably like it. You are correct.
We are a podcast that is all about making comic books more accessible to LGBTQ folks and women. So if you have a question about anything related to comics, comic adaptations, pop culture in general, conventions, cosplay, you name it, that's what we're here for. You can send us your questions at bitchesoncomics@gmail.com. Unfortunately, Gmail does not like the word bitch. They're pretty judgy about it. So we can't have it spelled out. It is bitchesoncomics@gmail.com. And do you remember, there's no I'm bitch.
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com and Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm Essie Fleenor. You can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @SE_Fleenor.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Churchfire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.